Oh, stop it.
This is Talkin' Audio.
Away we go on an all-new episode of the Talkin' Audio Podcast, episode 1299. Matt Robinson with you in our studio in beautiful Bytown, Canada. Checking in with Lever Sage in one of TCA's many satellite studios out in, out in Ashton. What's happening, man?
Beautiful Ashton. I'm glad you waited till 1299 with the Great One and Edmonton. And I thought you were going to wait for sure until unlucky 1300.
Right.
To bring me in to go, hey, what else could go wrong? Let's get Versage on the show. So always great to talk to you again. I have to say that I last week was scrolling through and said, you know what? You and I talking about the Tragically Hip is pretty good.
It was pretty good. We've gotten great feedback on that show, man.
Oh, really? I actually thought maybe no one would like it except for me and you, but I...
And really, I do this show for an audience of three or four at the most anyway, so...
But I went back and listened on... Because we recorded that a little bit ago. I won't tell people.
I mentioned it. That's okay. I mentioned it right on the show, teeing it up. We recorded that the first week of December before you left for... So it did require a couple of edits because... While we touched on a couple of topics, we sort of referenced the holiday season coming up. I'm like, that part can come out, right? So, but that was under the assumption that there was going to be times over in Italy that it was going to be hard for you. We didn't know what your internet was going to look like. We didn't know what your schedule was going to look like. And so it was, let's get something else in the bank if there's a week that we can't get on the horn together. And for the most part, we were able to do that most weeks that you were over there. And so... that piece of audio hadn't been used and last week we weren't able to get together. So I kind of remembered like, oh, I still got the hip thing. I'm going to drop that and just see, right? Like see how people feel about it. Man, we got some awesome feedback on that show. People really enjoyed it. So,
oh, I'm glad. I did a couple messages from friends of mine that I always think are just being nice when they, message me to say what a show, but, they also enjoyed it. I went back and listened to the whole thing and I really enjoyed it. I mean, I think sometimes with bands like that, you just can't get enough it doesn't matter how much talk there is. I could always listen to more. So, I really enjoyed that as well. And I'm looking forward to getting going about our Leafs today. Okay. Let's go.
Yeah. Let's start with the beers, man. I know, it's a little early in the afternoon, but you're powering through. I'm powering through. We're going to commit to this for the audience. So what do you got going there?
Well, you mentioned the holiday season and taking the edit out. I'm like, why? Cinco de Mayo is like right on the way here.
That's true. That's true.
And with Cinco de Mayo on the way, it's a huge holiday season for me. I actually appreciate the fact that when people do crafts and they do cervezas, it's not the easiest of things to do. I know like the actual brewers say, yeah, you know what? Making a cerveza is actually easier. But I think when everyone who's ever had a beer in their life has probably either had a Corona or a Sol you put a lime in it and you know what it tastes like. And it's just a perfect summer beer. And it's not like the most special thing in the world, but you know what a cerveza is. And sometimes when you feel like it,
Am I wrong to say, can I use this term? It's functional. It's doing a job on a hot Saturday afternoon by the lake or by the pool or whatever. It's not like this thing that you're going to dive deep in like, oh, I wonder how this was brewed and this is what.
Right.
No, it's hot as hell. I'd love a beer right now. And that's the perfect style of beer for this particular situation.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Except when you say functional, sometimes it's like describing a hockey player, especially a defenseman, it's serviceable. They're serviceable. And it's like, that kind of means they're bad. Like, when you say functional...
Replacement level beer.
Yeah, so I would say functional is like...
That's too much. It's too little. I'm not giving it enough credit.
It's a bit harsh because I'll tell you, I went out with some Sens fans and Ian Mendez and Brent Wallace a couple of weeks ago.
Functional reporters.
You took the words right out of my mouth. It's exactly where I was going with that. I met some functional Sens fans with some functional reporters,
right?
And I was the odd guy out. Like, but no. But we went to a bar, and they didn't really have all that much, to be honest. Yeah. And so, especially with domestics on sale at $6.50, and you're like, is $6.50 a sale? And I actually asked down the
table. Were you actually at the arena?
No. I'm like, is $6.50 a deal?
Yeah.
And everyone went, yeah.
Oof.
I'm like, a $6.50 domestic.
You know, yeah. Good. Yeah, no.
Yeah. So anyway, I got a Bud Light and asked the guy to put about 16 limes in it, and he did not disappoint. So that's what I would call a functional beer. Cerveza would be a slight step up, like a Corona and a Sol. But what I have in front of me right now is a Riverhead Mexican Cerveza, Riverhead out of Kingston.
Mm.
And I actually think that they do the best Cerveza I have had. I've had other places. I know our good friends, you know, Kick and Push did a Cerveza.
They do a really nice Cerveza.
They do a nice Cerveza. Brew Revolution does a nice Cerveza out of Stittsville.
I'll shout out the Old Dog Brewing Company and Bob Cajun, who I've at times been hard on this show in terms of needing to branch out a little bit more. They have a Cerveza. I think it's called the Chihuahua because all their stuff is dog themed, right? So that's their Mexican Cerveza. They have, over the last year or two, put that out. It's a slightly lower alcohol percentage, right? Like 3.7, something like that. If you do it right, it's a nice beer.
Well, I think Riverhead does it the best. Sometimes seek it out because if I'm feeling like it, and I saw it a couple of weeks ago in the beer store and said, I got to get me a couple. And now I've waited for a beautiful, beautiful Tuesday afternoon. So that's what I have in front of me. What do you have?
So I won't spend too much time on the brewery because I have in the past. This comes from the Lake of Bays Brewing Company. Our friend Angela Thompson, who has taken care of basically everybody who's a regular on the show at some point over the last few months, she texted me a few weeks ago and said, hey, I've got a few of these, the dark lager that they do. And I really enjoy that one. It's called Moonstruck. She's like, I got a few of these kicking around. You know, they're sort of out of season now. Everybody else is moving into spring and stuff, but I'm always down for a dark beer. She goes, if you're interested, I'll drop them off and you can have the rest of them. I'm, that's cool. I'm thinking, like I said, 6 or 8 of them. She dropped by with like 12 or 13 of them, a bunch of Spark House. And then this one, which, because I love the Spark House too. That's one of my OG craft beer ones that I jumped in on. And then she brought this one a little out of place because, like I said, there was probably 12 or 13 of the Moonstruck. There was a few of the Spark House and just one of these. And so I don't know if it just got thrown in by accident or she thought maybe I should try it. I have had this one before. This is their New England IPA, a hazy IPA called Starboard, about 5.5%. You know, like you said, early Tuesday afternoon. We don't have to go crazy on anything. I like the Lake of Bay stuff. And so she dropped by last Thursday or Friday to drop these off. But then I had some other stuff. She sat around. We tried together, hung out a little bit. It's a good friend to have, man. Like, you like these beer friends. That's, you know.
I do. I've noticed the fact that you have, you know, surrounded yourself.
Good
friend Andy from NIDA.
Got Ian from Whippersnapper. The boys over at Vimy. Yeah, we're getting to know some people here. These are the right friends to have.
Angela. Yeah. I mean, you're doing well. You know what, folks?
My friendship can be bought.
Everyone I just mentioned, you're lucky to have Matt. Okay, I won't say Matt's lucky to have you. You are lucky to have Matthew.
That's fair, but Matt's an expensive friend. Matt's going to sample a lot of products. So, Matt's friendship can be bought, and we're happy to do that. It doesn't cost you a dime. It might cost you a couple of beers. Lever, there's a few different places we can start, man, but we are now solidly into playoff hockey season. We're recording this early Tuesday afternoon. Monday night was another interesting one. Sunday was fascinating. Everybody's played at least one game now. This has been weirdly staggered in a few different ways. But where do you want to start, man? What's on your mind? Which series do you want to take a run at first?
I got to get out, I think, what a lot of us might be wanting to know. Including me, because I'm a fan of this show and I'm a fan of Tolkien, a fan of Matthew Robinson. See, I opened mine before and you didn't hear the pop because I opened mine.
Sorry.
I prematurely opened mine.
It's a different vibe when you're, yeah.
I forgot. I was just like, it's sitting in front of me and I want to drink
it. I want to drink this right now. Yeah, exactly.
And then I'm like, oh, I did it again.
Sorry.
Well, that's my fault. So I want to know when.
Have you ever seen The Rain?
I want to know.
Keep going.
No, that's enough. Nobody wants to hear anymore.
No, I just asked you. Keep going. I want to hear more. So when, you know, the elite defender that everyone keeps telling me that he is and had the worst Corsi through the first period and a half yesterday, Mitch Marner lost, you know, David Pastrnak with 10 seconds to go. What? Because why would you want to cover Pastrnak in an offensive zone faceoff? You know, with 10 seconds to go.
I'm exaggerating a little, but not by a whole lot, that is like the only guy on Boston. Like, I know Marchand got to 29. Like, he's still a very good player. But in terms of like, hey, if someone always on one guy, it's that guy. And somehow, wide open.
There's 13 seconds to go in a face-off in your own end, and you've tied it up, and you've got the momentum back, and it's 1-1. Just know where Pastrnak is.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Like,
good strategy.
And so... anyway, Marner doesn't. They give up the goal 2-1. They go into the dressing room. I want to know how you were feeling at that point. Down 1-0 in the series. You know, you battled back, got the Domi goal right after you took a bad penalty and Boston scored to open up, you know, the game. Yep. You got it back. It's 1-1. You're feeling probably pretty good. And you give up that goal. How are you feeling at the intermission?
Yeah, you know exactly how I'm feeling. Like, here we go again. It's just another day in Boston. In any game, right? Those last minute goals kill you. Those last 10 second goals, those last 5 second goals heartlessly murder you in cold blood. I look at that, and Marner did misplay it, but it seemed like almost everybody misplayed it. I don't know what McCabe and Benoit were doing. They ended up floating up high. Like, it looked like Benoit sort of chased Pastrnak up as he sort of faded back. Like, they played that. Like, there was 4 seconds left instead of 14 seconds left. You want, with 4 seconds left, a man-to-man. Just jump on everybody, don't give them any space, and wait for the clock to wind down. You can't do it with 14 seconds. So I think Benoit sort of chases Pastrnak up high. He gets the pass back over to, I think it was McAvoy, and then starts to fade away. So now they get lost in this man-to-man. Who's got who? And the pass comes down to Zacha. He makes a brilliant pass, man. Just gorgeous pass to Pastrnak, and everyone's out of position. John Tavares is the only one anywhere near the net, and at that moment, you go into that having given up a goal with, what was it, 4.8 left or something like that. Here we go again. Like, those kill you in any game, in any building, but down 1-0 in the playoffs against Boston, oof, man, it's a mental thing, right? Because it's still, you got 2 periods to go and you're down by 1. You shouldn't be worried. But the way you gave that up, and your goalie in the past has been fragile. What did that do to his confidence? And those sorts of things. I know a lot of people, and you just did a little bit, and you're not wrong, but a lot of people are trying to pin that on Marner. He was one of 3 guys who made brutal mistakes on that play, and happen with Pastrnak, right?
Like, So I agree, and it's actually way more fun to pile on Marner than it is on Benoit.
Sure,
but you also have to take into consideration that everyone now lauds Mitch Marner because he's an elite defender. He kills penalties. He does this. And it's almost all the excuses of all the things he does to make up for the fact that he's not nearly as good offensively as he once was. But if you have $11 million winger on the ice, I don't care how much Benoit is at fault. You need to cover David Pastrnak. And that's kind of how I boil it down. You make like $11 million, don't you, Mitch? Like, what does he make? You would know.
10.893.
Yeah. So, sorry. I know Benoit, you're right. A whole bunch of people mistakes.
Yeah.
But the guy who's making $11 million playing on the wing needs to cover the other guy making $11 million
This is a bit of a playoff thing for Mitch, right? And I've been frustrated with him, and he hasn't been good in the playoffs again. And that second intermission on Sportsnet, which I normally don't watch anymore, I'll flip to another game, I'll flip to the Jays, I'll do whatever. These intermission panels aren't very good at this point. But I had it on while I went and mixed another drink because It's stressful times here. And
So if you weren't doing that, I'd be wondering why.
Right.
Like, I'd be more worried about you.
So it was still on, and I'm listening, and they're talking about how, well, you should put him back with Matthews and get him going. You make $10.893 million. You get yourself going.
Exactly.
And especially now with Willie not playing, you can't load up Matthews and Marner on one line and become a one-line team. You need Matthews doing his thing, which he did, like an elite performance from Austin Matthews on Monday night. You need Marner down there supporting Tavares and whoever's going to be on that line. For the most part, it's been Matthew Nyes. And then you hope that the bottom two lines can give you something. And I'll be honest, Ryan Reeves, who I was really hard on early in the season, looked toast, unplayable. He's been much better in the second half, and he's been fine in the series. That fourth line, I didn't love in game one. It wasn't terrible. But in game two, they sawed off the Boston fourth line, which is all you want. You just want those shifts to be dead, right? Like, either way, don't give up anything. You may not score anything, and they were fine. But you need Marner at that price tag, especially knowing a year from now, or maybe as soon as this summer, they can start talking to him. He's going to want a raise. Well, I can't give you one if this is what you do in the playoffs. Put him back with Matthew so he can get going. No, no.
He's not getting a raise.
Are you sure about that?
Yes. How about this? Yes.
Okay.
Mitch Marner is not getting raised. But to your point, and other than the Reeves mistake on the first goal that Boston scored in game one, when he
buried Edmondson.
Yeah, like he goes to the extra hit and hits his own guy and gives up a 2-on-1. Now, Boston executed perfectly on the 2-on-1.
Yeah, they did.
But it made a great play, but still Reeves can't do that. So now that we've got sort of the negativity, and I wanted to hear a little bit of angst in your voice.
Well, we should have done this show before game two.
The Leafs, that's as gutty a performance in two periods as I've seen in a long time from a team in blue and white. Like, I know they won the series against Tampa last year. Good for them. They finally won a playoff series, blah, 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 blah. And then they got buried by Florida. They were very close to being in a spot to have to beat the Boston Bruins four times in five games, which is just a very, very difficult thing to do no matter what team you are in the NHL. Yep. So that's as gutsy a 40 minutes as you're going to see. Your goalie doesn't let in a goal and makes some 10 bell saves.
Yep.
Your best player is not only the best player for your team, he's the best player on the ice, period. That's the only
shot Toronto has is winning the series. He has to be the best player on the ice because he is. Like, Pasternak is fantastic, but he's a little more one-dimensional. Matthews has to do the face-off thing, and he did, won 70% of them. Has to be good in his own end, did, blocked a bunch of shots, had six hits, two assists, a big-time goal, and that just to knock down that pass and get going on that goal. Like, that's a fantastic game from Austin Matthews. That is big boy hockey.
I actually heard a couple of people talking afterwards that it possibly is the greatest game that he's ever played.
Yeah, Friedman's been pounding on that. I'm not writing it off, but there's some heavy recency bias going there. He's had some big boy games, right?
No, he has, but has he had those big boy games in the most important time?
Yeah, no. It's his best playoff game ever. I'll give you that for sure.
Okay, well then I'm going to put a playoff game ahead. You tell me what game. And I know, look, I'm sure he's played better games, but they probably didn't mean anything. And this one meant everything.
Yeah, they were under pressure here. He couldn't go down 2-0.
No, and he strapped that team to his back.
Yep.
And said, this isn't happening to us.
Right.
And I remember, and I'm not trying to compare them to Ottawa or anything else. I just remember, it's only because it was Boston. In 2017... the Boston Bruins played Ottawa in the first round.
This is Carlson to Hoffman, right?
And
it was in that series?
Yes.
Yes.
It was also Clark MacArthur scoring the winning goal in overtime in game six. But people forget the biggest thing that happened in that series, and it was the Carlson to Hoffman thing happened in game two.
That's just the thing that stands out, right? It's a crazy good highlight, so you remember what it is.
But they lost game one, and then they were down 3-1 going into the third period in game two at home.
Right.
And yes, and they gave up the goal where Carlson's yelling at everybody, and then you know, they have the goal that they come back that you just mentioned. But Dion Phaneuf scored in overtime.
Right.
And
a great Bob Cole. Maybe Bob Cole's last great call was on that goal.
Yeah. It was an unbelievable call. But all I'm saying is that Ottawa, in a 20-minute period, found a way to get out of a hole that they probably were not going to be able to dig themselves out of. And they just found a way to get going.
Yeah.
And it reminded me last night of the Leafs, who I think have been the better team. I know that sounds crazy. And I know Boston, yeah. No, I know Boston hit five posts and then they were up four or five. But the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first two games have done some really stupid things.
Oh, yeah.
And I think if you remove the stupidity out of what they've done, which I know you
Sheldon
can't always
Keith's been trying to do that for 3-4 years.
Yes, I know, but it's like, how many, even Simpson and Cuthbert on the call have been like,
that's a penalty you just can't take.
You can't take that penalty. You can't take that penalty. How many times have they said that? Like,
yeah,
three times for sure.
But that's the team they've gone out to build. Pizza Boy wanted to bring in Snot. And that, oh, look, we're in penalty trouble. Can you?
Yeah.
And this is the thing that people forget when they talk about everything gets let go in the playoffs. Not early. In games 1 through 2, 3, 4, in almost any series, it gets called. The penalties actually go up in the playoffs in those first four games of each round. Yeah. And in 5, 6, and 7, when lives are on the line, when teams are ready to be eliminated, that's when the whistle goes away. This thing that we're seeing now, the ticky-tack bullshit getting called, that's not uncommon because they want to be able to say, no, see, it doesn't change in the playoffs, but it does when someone's ready to be eliminated. And the Leafs have made brutal. The only one that I would take issue with, I think, was the one in game one that was McCabe, where you kind of go, all right, that's a little chintzy even for a regular season game.
Yeah,
everything else has been legit. If you hook someone, if you slash someone, they might let it go. If you high stick someone in the face, they're going to call it every time. They have to. And they've had lazy sticks, the Leafs.
And not even that. It's, you know, doing the stuff, hitting guys after the whistle, cross-checking them from behind, slashing Brad Marchand on the wrist.
Right.
Like,
although the Marchand dive on Monday night was, man, a performance for the ages on one of those.
But you know that he does that,
yeah,
right?
100%,
And the penalty, and I can't remember who slashed him on the wrist, but it was right off the draw, and they slashed him on the wrist.
Oh, that was the Domi one, too. That was Domi. Yeah.
But my point is that Domi took a bad penalty. He didn't do some great things in game one.
Yep.
Okay, well, who is there in game two? Max Domi.
Yep.
And so I think this Leaf team, now that I've watched them in the last 40 minutes of game two, I think it's the perfect time for Sheldon Keefe to go, look, guys, I'm going to talk a little bit more about Sheldon Keefe here in a minute, Matt, just so you know.
Okay.
It's the perfect time for him to go in and go, guys, we not only neutralized Boston, but we were better than them because our best player is better than their best player.
Yep.
And here are all the stupid things that we've done that have completely got us in trouble. And if we just stop doing these things, we're better than them. And I think the Leafs are going to win the series now. I wholeheartedly believe that. I think they're better. And I think Boston's got a lot of contributions so far from guys that you wouldn't expect, and that's playoffs. I get it.
Shout out Sean Beecher from yesterday.
Yeah, but how many goals is Beecher and Geeky and Brandon Carlo? Like, how many goals are these guys going to get?
Well, it's funny coming out of game one. It was 2-0 Boston at one point in game one. It was John Beecher and it was Brandon Carlo who scored the goals.
Yeah.
Between the two of them, they had 11 goals in the NHL throughout the regular season. Like, these are the motherfuckers that are scoring. Come on.
It's the first goal for Carlo in 19 games. Yeah. Like, of course it's in game one, right?
Yeah.
Like, but I get that's how the playoffs go, but they don't go like that for 6 or 7 games. The cream rises to the top. And yesterday, Austin Matthews, in the last 40 minutes, well, maybe the whole game, but the last 40 minutes, he's the best player on the ice. And Samsonov was brilliant. And the fact that he lets in that late goal, he had every reason to be down. It wasn't his fault, but he had every reason after what happened.
There was a lot of shit there, right? He could have covered that. He badly wanted to play it, but then it's Lilligren who gives a bad pass to Edmondson. Like, a lot of things broke down there. Then that causes that face off that you lose, and everybody forgets.
Yeah,
how to
defend. My point is I think he's going to be okay. I'm actually not worried about their goaltending at all.
Well, so now, speaking of goaltending, let me ask you, because they've been doing this alternating thing, right?
Yep.
This, and that works for them, and that's been fine all year. Now, down the stretch, Ullmark had like a 930 save percentage, and Swayman was like 888 or something through the last half of the season, except he played Toronto twice and only gave up one goal in each of those. He was brilliant against Toronto. So he gets the start in game one, and he was fantastic in that game. Ullmark was not bad. He was not a problem for Boston, but he didn't win. So they're going to go back to Swayman because they're going to keep alternating and because he's the guy who has a win. If Boston wins game three, what do you do in game four? Do you stick with your thing because you go, that's what our guys are used to. They're used to that's the rhythm of our team. We alternate. Do you go back to Ullmark in game four? Or do you go, yeah, no, the one guy's got two wins and has been very good. We're staying with him.
I would go back to Ullmark in game number four.
Okay.
Because I think the message that you send to your team when you do something all year long and it's proven to be successful and you're trying – whatever message it is as the coaching staff and maybe above them that you're trying to deliver to your team, you do it with consistency all year long so that nobody sways in the playoffs.
Right. Except Swayman.
That's where I was alluding to. I was hoping that you would get that. But nobody sways.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to do that early, especially when I have a lead in a series. I think you could actually convince me the other way that if they lose 1-0 and get outshot 59-22 and Swayman is clearly the best player on the ice, I think maybe at that point, I could say, okay, well, I might go back to Swayman again.
Right.
But I think you've sent this message, and if you do have a 2-1 lead, the worst that happens...
It's when you stop, right? It's when you go out of your rhythm that you tell your team there's alarm bells sounding here, right? We're out of what we do.
And when you're up 2-1, I don't think you want to sound any alarm bells.
Yeah, okay.
And you know, you think of the goals that went in last night for the Leafs.
Ullmark is not a problem.
I didn't love the Tavares goal.
Okay.
But it's a good shot and everything. Like, but there was nobody in front. He knew the puck was coming from there. So I didn't love that goal.
Right.
But it's only one goal. He certainly couldn't have done anything on the Matthews goal. And even before that, when they were throwing up all over themselves and giving the Leafs like 100 chances to put the puck in the net. And he made both him and Samsonov or whatever you want to call him, that made what within a minute, two saves that were just incredible.
Yeah.
Like game saving stops on both sides. So if I ever need to go back to that guy, it's like, okay, I played really well and my team only scored two goals and now you want to take me out.
Right.
Maybe you lose him too. So I'm not doing anything if I win. I'm keeping the same thing we've always done. I think when you start to lose and one guy's been clearly better than the other, I'm going to the guy that's better because I need to get back in the series, but not when I'm ahead.
So we talk about their consistency and staying with it and what message you're sending to your team if you make big decisions. And those things all come down from the head coach. And it sounds like you have something you'd like to get off your chest about the Leafs head coach, Sheldon Keefe.
It's not, Matthew, it's not getting off my chest. It's just, I'm such a good guy that sometimes I like to give the public service announcements and remind people about things that they, you know, need to know that they might have forgotten about. Hmm. And I feel like that's our duty to bring things up that, you know, just in case you forgot.
Right.
We're here to remind you.
Okay.
And,
he's here to remind me, is what he's saying.
It's how you remind me. And it's Nickelback,
this
and they're awesome.
Awesome.
I love Nickelback.
Oh. Theory of a Nickel Creed.
Okay. Okay. I didn't think you could get me off my game here, but Theory of a Nickel Creed, you know what? That could probably do it. I'm waiting for the mashup.
Yeah. I'm sure it's out there.
I'm sure it is. So, yeah, I'm watching the pregame, game number one. I know I can't bother you in the middle of a game.
You did try.
No, I never tried.
Okay.
I tried 8 minutes before the game, but I did not try during the game. Okay, I think that's a clear distinction.
That's fair.
Because when I watch a game that I don't want to be bothered, right at like the minute, that's when my phone goes off. And like, you can say anything to me till 1 minute before. So about 8 minutes before, I'm sitting watching the pregame. Sheldon Keefe, you know, the big line when Boston took advantage of Toronto. And, you know, he said, did you, you know,
yeah, like doing an interview with Sheldon Keefe, a one-on-one with David Amber. Yeah.
With David Amber. And Amber says, well, the time in Boston where you kind of called out your team, you didn't like the lack of physical response. And they showed the clip where he says, I hated it. I hated everything about it.
Yeah.
Like, is that the turning point of the season? My man Sheldon says, David. No, that's not the turning point of the season. People made a lot more out of that than we did internally. And I think the turning point of the season was, all right, it was Morgan Riley against Ridly Greig in Ottawa. And then they showed the clip and Morgan Riley getting suspended.
This was a serious face palm moment for me. Like, did you seriously bring, did he seriously bring this up again unprompted? What the fuck?
He did, because he knew and I knew and we all told you, except for you, we all told you that this was going to be the turning point of the season. And going into game number one of the playoffs, there's Sheldon Keefe saying Morgan Riley, because he was explaining what I explained back in February. Morgan Riley took the team and the higher aspects of where they wanted to go and what they wanted to accomplish. He took that, put it on his back and said, guys, this is going to be different this time. I wish I could have been there watching that with you live as it just came up.
That would never have been allowed.
No. You can kick me out after the pregame. I get that part.
My door had been like double bolted shut since 3 p.m. as I bounced off the padded walls that get installed here during playoff time.
I do think it's interesting that Sheldon Keefe, as I'm watching the game last night, I think it's quite clear that his job's on the line. If he loses to Boston, I don't think he's the coach next year. And I'm thinking about that quote and where the season turned around and will his guys play for him and can he be there and have his team be gritty enough at a time that they absolutely have to be. And then they did in the last 40 minutes. So I think the Leafs are in a really good spot. I like where they are right now because it's not just that they're 1-1 and they're coming home, because obviously Boston can win in Toronto.
Sure.
And they might. But I think they're battle tested. I think they've ramped up and now they've gotten to that playoffs, got a little bit too excited, did some really stupid stuff.
For the love of God, give me Nylander back. Come on.
They got away with it because they did some stupid stuff and they're still 1-1.
Yeah, you get the split on the road, right? That's supposed to be the goal. That's
Now
I should mention
the way that they did it. That's the way they did it.
That text you sent me at, but you're saying 6:52 or whatever the hell it was.
I can go in and check exactly what time.
I had I'd shut things down pretty good. Didn't want to hear from a lot of people on the whole day. I spent the early part of the afternoon with a couple little buddies of mine. One's 9, one's 5. We did our the only playoff pool I take part in every year is me making picks with them. They helped me hang the big Leaf flag out here on the balcony, which I'm waiting for the usual condo board. Hey, that has to come down. I'm waiting for that note still to come.
Yep.
At the end of Saturday night, you know me, Lee, a little bit. Not a particularly outgoing guy. Not a particularly social guy.
Mm-hmm.
I had 41 unread text messages. That never I can go days sometimes without receiving one text message, and I'm good with it, right? But throughout that day, it's people I knew in college who don't care about hockey, but know that this is big. This is the big time. And they're like, oh, hey, like, What do you think about the Leafs today? Yeah, you and I, we don't have to talk today. You can text me in August. We can catch up on our lives or we can whatever. We're not talking about hockey now when I know you don't get. I have any number of people I know in this city, right, that I've gotten to know over the year who are Sens fans, who are, look, your team hasn't played a meaningful game since December 7th or whatever the fuck it was. You think I'm going to answer a text message from you today about the Leafs? No shot. And so these are piling up on me, and I'll be honest with you, I accepted messages from three people during game one. One of them was my mother, who's watching the Leafs, and you know, she's on my side. We can talk about that a little bit. And even she doesn't text a lot. She's just, you know, kind of engaged, leave me alone a little bit. Another one was a friend of mine who I know couldn't possibly care less about hockey either way. She's just out enjoying her Saturday night and wanting to chat. Cool. We can do that a little bit. And the other one was my 88-year-old great aunt sending me a couple of emails. Oh, you know, I hope they turn it around, Matthew. And she's like one of the only people left calling me Matthew. And
Yeah, exactly. That's why I call you Matthew.
That's it. That's all that's getting through the net. And so the next morning, like, I got mentions from Hoffley on Twitter, from other people like, hey, you're ignoring my messages. Like, yes, I am. Oh, Don't be shocked by this. Like, to be fair to Hoffley, I'd been rattling his cage a little when the Jennies swept the 67s last week. I'm an Oshawa guy.
Not you.
But after the game, never mid game. No, he can give it. I just don't have to read it. I don't have to onboard this, right? That's not an obligation of mine. So when I saw that you had texted me somewhere middle of that, you know,
list of the day. I've gone back and looked. So the game started. I do think it was about an 8.
It was an 8 o'clock 50. Start. That's right.
8:15, puck drop, something like that. So my text was at 8:03.
Okay.
So just and
you had no shot, man. I wasn't even looking at that point.
And I had to go back. So it was probably about 10 minutes before that, right? Because then it happens. I'm like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing.
The interview,
So then I rewind it. I PVR it. I get it to the point. The first video doesn't work. I started at the wrong place. I got to go back and send it again.
Yeah.
I worked hard for 10 minutes to be able to send this to you. But your whole point, though, is so true.
Yeah. I'm not onboarding tonight.
In a Dallas Cowboys, even a regular season game, because they only play once a week, but especially a playoff game, you have no shot. Don't try to get a hold of me. You can't rattle my cage because my cage has already been rattled by myself.
I rattled it 9:30 this morning. Like,
I have rattled my own cage. You have no shot at talking to me. So yeah, I'm the same. I can get up on a Monday because I wouldn't, especially, you know, this year, and that was a way for the game, but you know, they got destroyed by Green Bay, which still I don't think I'm over.
It's only like my favorite Bay.
But really, I can tell Angela with Laker base. Okay.
Good point.
Yeah. See, but I would wake up to the same thing as you, an exorbitant amount of texts and calls from people that I don't want to talk to.
I don't think you're here to be supportive. I don't think you're here to be a good friend right now.
You know what? When you say you want to catch up with them Tuesday in August, I don't. I don't even want to catch up with them then, let alone hear from them now. So I totally understand. And you know what? I think for real fans, they actually go through a lot of that.
Yeah.
And they should. If you're a real fan and you care that much, then if you're going back and forth with people on text and Twitter and Instagram during the game, you're not as big of a fan as as I thought you were. You're just not. So I think we covered that series off. One of the other things I wanted to get your thoughts on real quick is I kind of went into this playoff year differently, right? Because, you know, I'm not where I used to be and I don't have to watch the games and I'm looking at them from a bit of a different perspective.
Sure.
I told a couple of people, they asked, well, what do you think is going to happen in the playoffs? I said, I have no idea what's going to happen. I really don't. I have no idea. People are asking me, and I'll tell you just so that I have it on record. I think I said it before, and this was before they were down 3-0 last night. I think Carolina is my pick to win the cup. But that's just my pick to win the cup because I think they're really good and they've been there before and they've had some disappointment and they're better. They got some acquisitions that weren't crazy acquisitions, but they really helped their team. I just really like their group.
Yep.
But
Well, if the biggest issue for them has always been they can't score in the playoffs, well, how about we go get Jake Guentzel? Pretty good solution there.
Anyway, I don't know that Carolina's going to win the cup, and I'm not. And but my point to everyone else is, I think this year, because we've talked about it on the show, is as good of a year as any that a Canadian team has the possibility of winning the cup.
Yeah,
and I am staunchly now in the corner, and before the playoffs started, that the team coming out of the West has a very good chance of being Canadian.
Yeah.
And now that we're through game one and the Winnipeg Jets scored 7 goals, I know they gave up 6.
Sure did.
I get it.
But how frustrating would that be if you're Colorado? We got 6 behind Connor Hellebuck and didn't win.
It's adversity, right?
Yeah.
It's a little gut-wrenching to think we got 6 goals on the best goaltender.
Right.
In the league, and we didn't win the game. That's not so good.
No.
And our goalie's not nearly as good as their goalie, and our goalie gave up 7.
True story.
But the Edmonton Oilers, who are my pick to come out of the West, I did pick a rematch of 2006. Carolina Edmonton. The Edmonton Oilers.
Where's
come out
Fernando Pisani at? Get out here, buddy. Sean Horkoff, where you at?
Pisani again scores. Oh my God. Yeah, exactly. So I just think Edmonton coming out in game one, scoring 7 goals. Winnipeg coming out, scoring 7 goals.
Yeah.
The Vancouver Canucks getting down in that game, roaring back to win on home ice. I'm like, this just feels.
2 goals, 14 seconds apart to tie it and take the lead. That is.
Yeah.
You want to talk about playoff momentum shifts? Whew, doesn't get much wilder than that.
Well, other than 2-10 from Carolina last night.
Well, there's that. You have to understand, not everyone was watching Carolina New York Islanders, right?
Like that. They should have been. down 3-0 and came back and got 2 in 10 seconds of a minute to go to tie it and win it. Oh, my God.
Like that Toronto-Boston game was good. It was tight, right? But Dallas-Vegas got off to a start that made it look like that was going to be Colorado-Winnipeg part 2. Like, the first period in that game was wild. I watched a lot of that. Then switched over to the Edmonton game where, like you said, McDavid comes out, puts up a butt ton of points. Zach Hyman gets a hat trick. That game, now, that was 4-0 at one point, and then it was 4-1 and 4-2, and I still... That's honestly roughly when I went to bed. I didn't have another late night in me. But you sort of like, oh, man, like they're kind of letting this slip. And that is still the concern. They end up giving up 4. And it doesn't matter when you score 7. But in theory, if this is going to tighten up, which you know is LA's only prayer, right? Like they want Deneau to do his thing. They want Dubois to do his things. Don't get this into a track meet. Slow it down. Like try and grind this out a little bit. I'm not sure if they can or not, but the fact that they give up 4 to that LA team in game one would be a little concerning to me as this series goes on, and you know it's going to bog down a little. It'll be a little like that's not a team that can run and gun and horse race with Edmonton. If they're successful in slowing it down, the fact that Skinner and that defense gave up 4 would be a little worrying to me.
So do you know what the best thing that could ever happen to a coach in the playoffs in the NHL? And I've had coaches actually tell me this, like during the regular season and the playoffs. It's easier to get your team's attention in the playoffs than it is in the regular season.
Yeah.
So what you actually want is for your team to win but not feel like they played very well.
Yeah.
Because at that point, you're actually having success where you're getting the 2 points or you're getting one of the 4 victories in the playoff series that you need. But when you walk into the room, like
you don't feel great about it.
If you're the Winnipeg Jets, you feel awesome that you beat Colorado and scored 7 goals.
Yeah.
But if you're a player on that team, the only thing you're thinking about is if we give up 6 every night to that team, we are losing the series 4-1.
Yeah.
So you actually won a game and probably have more of the players' attention as the coaching staff than you've ever had.
Right.
And so I think the coaches have always told me that. It's like the best thing that could ever happen is for you to get a victory when you need it and
A when win the captain, you don't deserve, an unconvincing win.
When the captain or the leader or whoever it is walks into the room the next day, there's no joking around. There's no, it's like, guys.
We were lucky to get that.
We know how much better we have to be. And so I want to fix things up one game to none with Connor McDavid and Draisaitl.
Yeah.
I want to fix things at that point when I've won 7-4 and go, yeah, we can't give up four every time because we're just not going to score five or six.
Well, do you think LA has any chance of dragging this into the mud like they want to, or is Edmonton at this point?
No.
Like these teams have played each other now 3 years in a row, and LA, while not winning, has had some success in slowing it down, right? Getting it into the mud a little bit and having some overtime games and things like that. It just didn't look in game one like they were going to have that in them this year. This LA team isn't quite as good as past years have been, maybe. And Edmonton's team looks to just be on a different gear. I'm not sure LA is going to be able to slow them down the way they want to.
They're not.
Yeah.
I think LA has no chance in this series. None. Zero.
So we may see them give up six or seven a couple more times, you're thinking?
I think since late November, early December, the Edmonton Oilers have been the best team in the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
And it's not close. And so I know there's been other good teams that have other great players, but the best player in the game has been on the best team for the last 5 months.
Yep.
And you're telling me that the LA Kings are now going to beat that team four times in six games? I don't think so. So, and it kind of leads to,
I don't mean do they have a chance of winning. I just mean do they have a chance of slowing this down a little? And
well, I'm sure there'll be a game where Edmonton won't score and Philip Deneau will be lauded for his great defensive effort. Like, yeah, there'll be a game, but not four times in six games. Yeah. And so I think the Edmonton Oilers have a great path right now. And I'm really excited because I think if I asked you, if you were to name, you know, the best three forwards in the NHL, like if you were starting, what do they call them in the NBA, like the all pro team in the NFL or the NBA, where it's just like, if you could put three forwards and two defensemen and a goalie,
yeah,
and just pick the best, doesn't have to be the best center or the best left winger. Who are the best three forwards, the best two defensemen, and the best goalie in the game? Who are they?
Well, so up front, I'll go McDavid, Matthews, McKinnon.
McDavid, Matthews, McKinnon?
Yeah.
Okay, I would agree. I think it would be hard to go away.
I got time to swap one of them out. Like, for the argument for Pasternak, I got time for that discussion. But those are the three off the top of my head.
Yeah, which I would agree.
Yeah.
I also think that Drysdale's not that far behind.
That's right.
One of those guys.
Wasn't his year, right? He's still very good, but he's had years where he's been elite, and would be in that mix, where this year maybe he fell back just a little bit.
So the defenseman would probably be another category, because I think best defensive defenseman, and like when we say, oh, the Norris Trophy and the best,
you're like talking about Makar and Fox and Yossi and Hedman's probably fallen back a little bit, but yeah, we can argue about defensive defenseman, offensive defenseman, what are you looking to do, right?
Right. But all of those guys that you just mentioned, whether it's Fox or Hedman or Yossi, or they're all in the playoffs.
Yeah.
All of them.
Yep.
And then who's the best goalie? Telebuck.
Yep. This year for sure. Yeah.
Right. So I think this is the year where the NHL has this, who's the best players in the regular season? Who are all the great players? And then come playoff time, it really isn't about that. It's about who are the best teams.
Yes.
I think this year is going to be different. And I really believe that Matthews is going to help Toronto get quite far, that McDavid is going to propel the Oilers into the limelight where everyone's going to be looking at Edmonton. I think, you know, Winnipeg doesn't have that much. They've been really good. They kind of fell down at the end of the year, but they still have the best goalie in the league.
Yep.
I think you're going to see all of these teams that have the best players at those positions, they're all going to be front and center when you need them. And I think that includes, especially, I guess the point I'm making is I think it includes McDavid and Matthews.
Right.
And that means Edmonton and Toronto are not going to be the Edmontons and the Torontos that we have seen in years past. I think those times are done. What do you think about that? Because the best players in the game, we always see.
It's just one of those sports, right, where your star can only do so much. And I look at Toronto. I think they can get by Boston. But I don't know what's going on with Nylander. Marner seems to shrink every year in the playoffs. And so I don't know what's reasonable at that point to ask of Matthews, right? To get you through Florida, to, you know, like I can see it with McDavid because I like the way that team is built a little bit. But I have some questions. Like, I'm not sold on Skinner yet. I think he's good enough, especially if, you know, LA is going to allow you to have set. Now, and even next round, like when you talk about a Canadian team going deep in the West, in theory, Vancouver's going to beat Nashville and Edmonton is going to beat LA. So now you're playing Edmonton-Vancouver round two. And so you're guaranteed one Canadian team in round three. And I would pick Edmonton to be that team.
Yep.
And can Winnipeg, if they beat Colorado, I would have said they were going to play Dallas because I think Dallas was my pick to win the cup. But, you know, there's no easy path for Dallas either to get through Vegas here. And now that they're back, that to me, the most hilarious thing that happened on Monday night was Mark Stone scoring the first goal for Vegas in the playoffs. Like, I get why everyone's so upset about that, but that's not a loophole that's getting closed anytime soon until the next CBA. And so the fact that Mark Stone comes out and goes, yeah, check me out, scores in the first period for Vegas, I think that's hilarious. I get why people don't. I get why people are upset by it. But Vegas could take down Dallas. But it gets often about path, right? Who do you have to beat to get there? And I think to get out of that central, you know, Winnipeg's up one as you and I talk on Colorado. Let's assume it's a breach, but for now, let's assume they beat Colorado and then they got to play either Dallas or Vegas. I think that's a tougher road than what the Pacific has, because I think Vancouver and Edmonton, that's a tough round in the second round. And it's still, for our purposes here, for this discussion, it means a Canadian team gets through, but I think that's a rougher road an easier road than what the Central has.
Right. Yeah. Which I totally agree with you. I just think if you get past Colorado in the first round, then you just got past one of the best teams in the NHL.
100%, man.
And you got the best goalie on the planet, and you're going to be feeling awfully good no matter who you play.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean they're going to get there, because there's no question. And that's why I'm saying this path sets up so well for the Edmonton Oilers. That
for sure.
I think if you told people, hey, the best team in the NHL since the end of November is going to get LA and Vancouver in the first two rounds.
Cha-ching,
okay.
Cha-ching.
Right. Like, sign up all day.
I'm not
day,
sold
every
on Vancouver, right? Like, I'm sold on them to beat Nashville, but I'm not sold on them to win.
I'm not even sold on them to beat Nashville. Yeah. I think they've had a hell of a year and don't quite know.
Hey, so let me ask you this, because you were all about the Nashville Predators coaching staff. They know their team, right? We're going to cancel that U2 trip. And they went, whatever it was, 16-0-2 after that or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
Vancouver back in the day used to come out for home games, home playoff games, to Where the Streets Have No Name by U2. You think they were always going back to that, whether it was Nashville or not? Or was that just a little extra, like, we're going to rub your nose in it a little bit? You didn't get to go see U2 coming in here. What do you think, man? Because I thought that was awesome. I always thought it was awesome. I think it's a cool vibe when the crowd starts to roar and the song is building. I think that was always, like, one of the cool things. But they haven't done it in a while. And so to go back to it now, it felt maybe a little opportunistic.
I think it's just perfect timing.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
I think they were always going to do it because the Vancouver Canucks just haven't been very good for a long time.
Yeah, like, they've only had home games. They haven't had any home games once in like 8-9 years. The only time they were in was that bubble in Edmonton during the COVID year. So
I think they would always have gone back to it because it's a thing in Vancouver. I think if it wasn't a thing and all of a sudden they're playing U2 and they've never done it before.
Yeah.
But I also think that that's short-sighted as far as, like, we finish better than Nashville. We think we're better than Nashville.
Yep.
Like, we have bigger plans than just to beat the Nashville Predators. But does it work out perfectly?
It was great.
With
was
that? So yeah. Good. It's. I mean, the irony's thick there, right? Yeah. So, and good for them, because I didn't think that they would be able to come back from what they did. And I wanted to believe in the Vancouver Canucks because I just hope that they do well.
Yeah.
But I don't like coming into the playoffs, they're the team that I was like, yeah, I could see a first round exit there, as opposed to many other series. So I'm hoping for them, but I do think back to the discussion that it sort of clears the path a little bit here for Edmonton. And they're the team to me that you got to watch. And for the rest, your argument about Winnipeg still holds up to Colorado, Vegas, and Dallas.
Yep.
Like for Colorado to win, they're going to have to beat Winnipeg four times next six games and then beat one of the other teams anyway.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's a very tough grouping. It's a whole other discussion. I hate the NHL's format. I hate it. I don't just dislike it. I think it's awful. It's awful, awful, awful. And there's just so many things that could be done about it.
This year's the perfect example, right? Because in theory, if you want to do the division thing to build rivalries, I get it. But it's the wild card that fucks it up, right? And it has to be more like the CFL, where only you're crossing one way. It can't cross both ways. And this year is actually the perfect example. Nashville's in the Central, and they're going up the Pacific route because of which wild card they had. Vegas is in the Pacific, and they're going up the Central route. It only should matter if one division has, you know, beat out the fourth place on the other side. You know what I'm saying? Like, in this situation, yes, Nashville and Vegas are swapped. That should never happen. It should only be if, you know, we're getting that extra team out of one division. So Nashville should have stayed in the Central. Vegas should have stayed in the Pacific. And you come up through that path unless there isn't a team in that other division. And so two teams from one get in. Am I making sense there, man, the way I'm explaining that?
Well, I think if for people who don't watch the CFL, which I get it. I don't get it. That's fine. But yeah, the fourth place team in one division has to be better than the third place team in another division for it to cross over. And it makes sense that if the fourth place team has a better record than the third place team, okay, well, they're going to go over and take their spot.
So if it's about building rivalries and you have a fourth place team from each division getting in, then just stay in your lane, right? Like, I know technically you're swapped in terms of where you finished, but no, like, this is, we're staying in divisions unless there isn't a fourth place team from that division is all I'm saying. That, or, you know, that you beat the fourth place team from another division.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's totally, totally fair.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I don't get where the advantage is for the teams that play the best. I think you got all of these matchups to even explain to people who's going to play who in the playoffs with a week to go.
Yeah.
And how it all works. I think explaining to a non-NHL fan how their playoffs work is like impossible to do.
Well, like Dallas wins their division. They get the defending Stanley Cup champion from another division. Like, okay, here's your reward, I guess. Now, I know Vegas didn't finish like a cup champion, but I don't know. I sort of get it, but commit to the division thing or go back to the 1-8 thing. I don't like this sort of halfway in between, and we're sort of, I don't know. I don't love it either.
Or heaven forbid, with the grueling travel on the private charters and beds and meals and everything that happens, that you have to fly a couple of times.
You're going 116?
You damn bleeping right I am. Give something to somebody.
Well, as far as round one travel goes, Vancouver, Nashville, like Nashville is not as far west as people think it is. I know we think country and western and stuff like that. Tennessee is, you know, it's not that far west. And so as far as like rough travel for round one goes, yeah, Vancouver and Nashville is pretty. I think back to the days, it wasn't as big of a thing yet, but, you know, Toronto playing San Jose when they were in the Western Conference, like, man, this is a little rough for round one. Like, it's,
well, and even back like further. Let's remember that these players flew commercial.
Yep. No, you're right.
Like, and nobody cared.
Nope.
And you know who got to the Stanley Cup final? The New York Islanders and the Edmonton Oilers, because they were the best teams.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, in the eight, like, yeah, that's what happened.
You're right, man.
And the travel and this and that, I think we just complain about it so much.
Yeah.
And if you want an advantage, give an advantage. So I'm now looking at like what the matchups would be if it were 1-16. Well, the first one would be the Rangers Capitals. That would be. Yeah.
So that didn't change a whole lot.
That'd be one in. No, but that'd be 1-16.
Yeah.
Like, okay. So yep. no travel issues there. And I think when you start to go down the list, like even looking at 3-14, yeah, I mean, Tampa's playing Colorado. Or sorry, Tampa's playing Carolina. Like,
but you are going to see these things. At some point, it will be LA, Montreal, or Vancouver, Florida, or like over time, that will happen.
But again, so LA, let's just say with all of those series, and I'm really staunch on this, and I know we could have a whole other discussion. Mm-hmm. I'm really, really big, Matt, on the argument that you look at some of the teams who won the Stanley Cup. I know they were really good. I get it. But when you go back into the mid-2010s and you understand that the Chicago Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup 3 times.
Yep.
The LA Kings won the Stanley Cup how many times?
Twice, 12 and 14. Twice. Yeah.
So, but it was like 5 times in 7 years or 5 times in 6 years that one of those teams won.
Yep.
And then the time where like one of them won, they faced each other in the conference finals. And it was, I remember that being one of the greatest series I ever saw. Mm-hmm. Do you know that those teams had the most miles traveled right. of any team in the Stanley Cup playoffs? And when you're Chicago and you got to go to LA and then you got to go to San Jose and then Vancouver. You got to go to like that is no picnic. The most miles traveled in the playoffs were by the Stanley Cup winner named LA or Chicago. I get that they had good players, but I think when you get on the road and you spend all of that time with those people going after one goal, I think it matters. I think it matters that you stay in hotels. I think it matters that you travel with them further. And it's you against the world. It's not you going back to your home at 10:30 with your wife and kids because everyone thinks that that's more rest. Guess what, people? It's not. When you go home and your wife and kids are there and you got to get up and be in the playoff mode, it's not more relaxing to go home.
I'm sort of half with you here on this, Lee. I think when you look at it, like, I think if you're on the road, let's say, well, Boston, Toronto here, the travel's not tough, right? But on the road games, they are road games. You are staying in the hotel and spending that time together. I don't think the extra miles, I don't think the extra time zones help. I think that's hard on your body. I get the team bonding thing, being together more thing. I don't think it actually helps you to go further, right? Or to have more time zones. I don't think that's useful.
Which, fair, yeah. But I'm just telling you the facts of who won.
Yeah.
And those teams had the most miles traveled. And so my point to my point to that is we can have another discussion on that another day. Yeah. But my point is that if you go 1-16, you're not getting cross-country travel every time, and if
not every time,
series,
but you're getting it more.
So,
well,
so what?
That year you're talking about that LA first won the cup. They played San Jose in the first round. Like that's not tough travel either. Like it's sometimes just the geography of your market, right? Like Vancouver was the first team to like really invest in sleep science, right? Like, okay, we're traveling to whatever, Phoenix for round one or whatever it might be. What can we do to make sure? When should we fly home? When should we stay overnight when normal teams wouldn't? Like, these things are worthwhile in studying, but the miles hurt you, right? The time zones hurt you. And that's why the East will always, like, in theory, we've seen years where Philadelphia has gone to the cup final and they played Boston and then they played New York and then they played. There are teams in that New York metropolitan area that can go weeks at a time without getting on a plane, right? Like if you're the Rangers, you have a homestand for 4 games. Then you got a road trip that is Islanders, Flyers, Devils. Yeah. Like that stuff.
I get it.
It adds up.
But,
it adds up.
But tell me who has won the cup in the last 20 years. Wow. That's
had Colorado that. Has tough travel.
Yes. Yep. Very tough travel.
Tampa has tough travel.
Yep.
I'm not saying Chicago, you're out. I'm not saying they're Chicago, out to lunch. St. Louis is in the kind of the center of the country. So Chicago, like, it's only hard because of the time zones, right? Like the not only hard,
I,
but
I just okay. I think you're right. It yeah. is harder crossing time zones.
Yeah.
But that to me is not as big of an advantage as actually finishing first and facing the worst teams.
Yeah. Yep.
The worst because you played. Like, to me, the Rangers, does anyone even know that they're the President's Trophy winners and they're supposed to be the best team?
Right.
I don't consider the Rangers the best team in the NHL, but if the Rangers get the worst two teams because there's an upset and they face the 16th ranked team and the 14th ranked team,
right.
that's an actual advantage sure for is. Finishing sure first.
Yep.
And it's so easy to explain the playoffs. That's the other thing.
The top Who's seed face- left will always face the lowest seed left.
Thank
and
you.
Then we'll sort it out in the middle. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And upsets allow for crazier things to happen and you don't know who you're facing, but
yeah.
to explain playoffs to people right now and why
yeah.
why Colorado should have to play Winnipeg and Vegas.
Well,
and
I get why people have no sympathy, but for the last 2 years, it was why are Toronto and Tampa playing each other? And you have the yes. fourth and fifth best teams in the league playing each other in round one. What are you
Which
doing?
Which is what I hate.
Yeah.
Well, that is the, that exactly, Matt, is what I probably should have said 10 minutes ago.
Right.
Okay. I don't want 4 and 5 playing in the first round of the playoffs
right.
when there's 16 teams in the playoffs. Right. It doesn't make any
And so you're right. This year, it's Winnipeg, Colorado. That's the one you go. That's not fair. Those two teams both deserved better than this. And someone's going home way too early. And
don't like
but
it.
Here we are.
Don't like it at all. Other than that, I hate afternoon weekend hockey.
Really
drives me crazy.
You're a big NFL guy.
Yeah, but the good thing is about how popular my team is. They always play at 4 or 8. They never, like,
hey,
don't
hey,
ever.
Hey. Leaf guy put, here can relate. I'm never having to play a 1:30 p.m. afternoon
never.
Game
you
as
think,
a Leaf
think,
guy. That's not
you think
happening.
The Leafs are
ever,
playing at
ever.
When they start? When they start this year? 12:30 Sunday afternoon. yeah, Why no. am I watching that game? I'm not watching that game. And I'll tell you what, your Leafs, our Leafs will never, never play a 12:30 Sunday game, and they'll never play a 5 o'clock Saturday afternoon game.
Right.
Like Carolina and the Islanders.
Prime time, baby. That's what we do around here.
Right. So I just don't, like, I get it from, you know,
Sunday,
again,
honestly,
the American
though.
American perspective. But
Sunday was awesome, right? You could turn on the TV at 12:30 and there was hockey till 1 a.m. Like, that only happens in round one. That is awesome. If you were a hardcore fan of that team that played at 12:30, that was the Tampa Florida game. Like, you would be probably irritated, although I do understand afternoon games are a little bit more of the culture in the U.S., right? Like, it's a little more acceptable.
Yeah.
But for the average fan who didn't have a horse in the race in any of those games, to be able to just flip on the TV at 12:30 and have hockey run straight through till 1 a.m., man, the first round rules. Like,
I get it, but that's not everyone has that kind of time. And
well, no,
I want other things.
We had the show to do here Sunday afternoon. I'm not saying you can sit there for 13 hours and watch it.
It wasn't a personal attack on you just because you do have the time. I just don't, like, for me, it's really hard for me to get, like, okay, I'm going to sit my ass down on the couch at 12:30 in the afternoon when I'm really pumped for the game that's at 7
yeah.
or 8.
No, nobody's sitting down and watching all 13 hours. But as you come and go through the day, it's still on, and you're like,
yeah,
me,
but
awesome.
I end up flipping a lot to the Jays, and
yeah.
My man Remarkable is back.
Oh, my God.
Okay? Being his Remarkable self again.
Please stop.
I know. It's just good.
That's the worst.
Remarkable?
Remarkable, yeah. Jordan Remarkable Romano.
Well, he's from Markham.
I understand,
so, yeah,
I understand the pun. Thank
I wanted to explain to the audience.
Yeah.
I even knew that you got that.
Yeah.
But can we just talk very quickly? Because I know that, you know, there's a time.
Yeah.
I'm quite excited about how the Jays have started.
Okay.
And I'm interested to hear your take on it quickly, because I think they had, we've talked about it, that the first 10 games is a really, really tough stretch. And they got through it relatively unscathed. Mm-hmm. Other than kind of Turner hitting at the beginning, now Varsho is on fire. Nobody's really like Vladdy and Bo. And
it's like the pitching that's keeping you alive right now.
Right, Springer. They're not really doing anything.
Yeah.
And they're just winning games still. Like, they go into San Diego and they win a couple, and they
not
won the
an
first
easy
one.
Place to win.
And they won the first one in Kansas City, and yep. And before San Diego, where was it that they went and
they won four straight series at right. home. They had Seattle, Colorado, New York, and
The Yankees, and they gave away the one they should have swept, the Yankees. They absolutely pissed it away.
Yep.
But then they got right. What I liked about that is that, okay, we had a 4-1 lead. We had won the first two games. We had really held the Yankees bats, who were struggling. I thought it was hilarious that Joe Girardi got thrown out of the game because a fan yelled. I would be that fan.
Easy. Aaron Boone. Joe Girardi.
Sorry.
What are we like?
Joe Girardi. Yeah.
What are we in, like, 2009 or something?
That's fair. I can't believe I just said Joe Girardi.
But for people who missed that was hilarious, Matt. Now, if you're a Yankee fan, it's less hilarious. But he's out there arguing with the ump. The ump says, yeah, I'm not listening to anything from you. So Boone turns around to walk away. Like, he's going back down the dugout.
Man, did he look like Joe Girardi from behind.
A fan yells, and umpire Hunter Wendelstad's like, ah, you're out of here. And he's like, I didn't say anything. I didn't. And cameras have picked it up. Like, you can hear the whole thing. And it's not Aaron Boone who said a word.
No.
And the umpire's like, I don't care if it wasn't you. You know, what? How can you not care? You have to care. Like,
I know.
It seems like a relevant detail.
I thought that was a prime example of umpires just thinking.
Ump show, baby.
That it's the ump show and it's about me. And like, if you're going to go to video.
And even yes,
to look to
I love
look
it.
At,
I'm going to review whether it's you I'm throwing out of the game.
Right. No, but if you're going to go to video to go to this bang bang play yep. where a glove touches the guy's hand 1 inch before he touches the base when he's trying to steal a base or yep. whatever, yep. and you're going to use video, then you're going to throw a manager out because a fan yelled.
And so
nobody
after
nobody
the game
can look at this,
because you can do this occasionally and take note, NHL, you can actually allow your officials to be held accountable. Sometimes you can
imagine
go and
that.
Have a what they call like a field reporter or like someone on behalf of the media who goes in and speaks to the ump. So Hunter Wendelstad says in that moment, it sounded to me like it was coming from the dugout. And he goes, in that moment, I don't care who it is, because Aaron Boone is responsible for what happens in that dugout. Now, he's still wrong. It didn't come from the dugout. And the explanation he's trying to give is still paper thin, right? Like that he would be responsible if it's another Yankees player who yells something out of nowhere. But just as you suggest, man, the ump show, this complete inability to go, hey, I fucked up. Like, I shouldn't have thrown him out there. Or, hey, that was a, you know, not a great moment for me. I apologize. Like, we so rarely see anyone hold themselves accountable. And the only one that you can ever remember is that umpire who called out, remember?
Jim Joyce.
Yes. Guy
with,
had a perfect game going. I was going to say
Galarraga.
Andreas Galarraga, but he's a first baseman, wasn't he? It's not Galarraga.
No, the pitcher for Detroit.
Yes.
But it was Jim Joyce.
It was Jim Joyce. And he comes out and he says in tears, I screwed that kid. That kid had a no hitter going or a perfect game. I can't even remember which one it was.
It was a perfect game.
And he goes, I call that guy safe and he wasn't safe. I blew it for that kid. And you go, well, you know what? Especially if you're a Tiger, I'm still irritated by that, but you just took the bullets out of my gun, right? Like, you said I was wrong. What am I supposed to do beyond that?
Why do umpires, and what's the guy's name? Hunter
Wendelstad.
Wendelstad?
Yeah.
If Hunter Wendelstad or Major League Baseball even ever got the idea, what if I just come out and apologize anyway?
Right.
What if I just go back and watch the video and go, man, I was heated and I never should have been heated in the first place as an umpire. And I went back and watched the video and the fan yells out and not the manager. And I come out and issue a huge apology.
I was wrong. Shouldn't have thrown him out. He was correct. I apologize.
What do you think the respect for him is going to be going forward for the rest of the year? You're actually helping yourself
Yeah.
If you do that, instead of digging in with this paper thin argument,
do you remember Jim Joyce's name off the top of your head? If he's not the one who comes out and is the exception to the rule,
nope.
Like it's, you go, okay, I get it. We all fuck up sometimes. I respect that. That's fine.
No, I remember Angel Hernandez and how bad he is.
Yep.
That's all I remember. Like, other than that, it's like, oh.
But it's the Yankees, so fuck it. I'm fine.
Yeah, but who's what's the guy's name? Tim. I don't think he umpires anymore. Behind the plate, Tim. Oh, I'm blanking, and listeners are going to help me with the slowest strike call in the history of the world.
Wait, where think about it.
Guys wouldn't even know, and they're on to the next pitch. And then finally, this little arm comes out, like just a little, like almost like a half arm on the right, going strike. Almost like he's a naked gun, right? Like just
yeah
strike.
I'll get to it.
Tim McClelland.
Right.
I'm
thinking about other things. I'll get to it.
Hilarious. Yeah. Like he's called strike three. The catcher thinks it's strike three. The pitcher's walking off the field, and he's like, "Yeah, okay, I'll ring him up. Like, and I'll do a half-hearted ring." Like it's just hilarious to me. Well, but
I would be more sympathetic to Yankees fans had it happened to a player or something. Your manager gets thrown out, whatever. Like, it matters. It doesn't matter.
It's not a big deal in baseball.
Like, Cox down in Atlanta, he used to intentionally get himself thrown out in the first inning because it was hot as shit and he'd want to go back in the office and drink beer throughout the afternoon. Like, he'd argue something stupid just to get thrown out of the game. Like, it really doesn't matter in how he's going to play out.
My team's good. Yeah. My bench coaches are good.
Right.
But
I'm out
anyway,
of here.
I do think quickly that the Blue Jays have kind of avoided a disastrous start, and now they've kind of leveled the ground. And I like the fact that when they gave away that big lead to the Yankees, they still won the series, but they could have swept them.
Yeah.
And then they came back, and what they've done is won 3 of 4 in San Diego and Kansas City since that day.
Yep.
And that, to me, shows maturity and shows that, yeah, the bats aren't going, but the pitching's been good.
Oh, man. I'm loving the Yuriel Rodriguez story. Like, he's been fun to watch and everything that guy's been through. Like, he's fit in nicely there in that 5 spot. I know over the course of the season, he's going to be on an innings limit. That's going to be tough. Honestly, Manoa seems to be coming around down in AAA. I'm not saying he's ever going to be, you know, Cy Young candidate again, but can he be your number 5 in the rotation? My confidence in that idea is growing a little as his last few performances down there have played out, because you're not going to be able to ride Rodriguez all the way through the season. He's just not going to have the innings to do it. But, like, the pitching's been terrific. And yeah, Varsho, has he figured something out or is he just on a hot streak? We'll see. But there are, you know, they've won 4 series in a row. As you and I sit here and talk Tuesday afternoon, they've won the 1 of 4 in Kansas City. That's a series you should win. So, like, everything seems to be okay right now, but there are still reasons for concern with that lineup, with that offense, and what those guys are doing. But the pitching is buying them time, and they're getting wins that are going to help you down the road. So, you know, there's reason to be a little concerned still, but no reason to be as negative as the vibes seem to be at this point.
No, I think there's some concern because of the big boy bats haven't got going, but I think in baseball it's all cyclical and they will get going, or else if they don't, then they have no chance anyway.
Yep.
So I'm just excited the fact that they've kind of steadied the ship. They had that big 10-game road trip to start the year. They haven't lost a series at home. They're now going on the road and handling San Diego quite nicely. And I just think there's a lot of things that haven't happened, yet I look at where they are and how they've rebounded, and they're in a really good spot. And sometimes you can play yourself, like in any league, and we've watched this with the Ottawa Senators for the last 7 years, you can play yourself out of playoff contention real quick. And the same thing in baseball. You have a bad April and May, forget it.
You're done.
Like
your whole summer as a baseball fan is going to suck.
Yeah, and the Blue Jays have kept like in a nice spot with a kind of a tough schedule and some of the bats not going. So that gives me a lot of optimism, even though, as you said, there's some room for concern.
Sure. That's about where we'll wrap this one up. Good to catch up with Lever. He's going to go get he's got some things to take care of. And
More dental work.
Yeah.
Hopefully, well, I mean, it'd be great if I came in next week and couldn't talk, and then you would just talk the whole show, and people would like that better.
You're here anyway.
Yeah, I get that, but I'll be Bobby Cox, and I'll sit back and drink a couple of beers and listen to you. Sounds like a good thing to me.
Yeah, I know.
I know. Nobody loves hearing the sound of your own voice more than you. I get
true,
that.
Man. That is true.
All right, but look forward to hopefully our blue and white being, you know, closer to round two by the time we talk next.
Stop doing that. That's where we'll wrap this one up for Lever Sage. My name is Matt Robinson. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you're following along on social media at TalkCanAudio, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for showing up. It was fucking amazing. Sorry.